So my reflection from chapter 3 was not so much a reflection on chapter 3 as it was more of a sharing of my own spiritual practice or system of beliefs that are less rooted in Christianity and the God language, and maybe more rooted in a worldly perspective that embraces aspects of Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, etc. So I will quickly kind of reflect on some parts of chapter 3 and chapter 4 in this reflection recording. So at one point in chapter 3, it says, "Nothing on earth can satisfy your desire for happiness." And one of my reactions to that was that I disagree in general, but I do agree that in my life, in moments where I've felt most happy, I've actually probably been most balanced and grounded in my own spiritual practice through meditation and yoga. And I do think that religion and philosophies like Buddhism have a tremendous amount of value, in that they provide this profound safety net, this trust in something much bigger than our own day-to-day. And when I was a child, I was much more religious, in a religious sense, and not so spiritual as I am today. And as a child, I feel like that my religion gave me a lot of, well, it was giving me faith, but I also would say it gave me confidence and trust in a bigger picture. And it also gave me a great sense of gratitude. And I would pray every night, and it was an opportunity to reflect on what I had and didn't have, and kind of the millions of people that exist in this world in very different circumstances. So I do very much appreciate and value what religion and spirituality have offered me in my life. And so there's definitely something there. I never will, and probably never have, and probably never will identify as someone that's atheist. I think I would actually wouldn't be able to have a life partnership with someone that identified as that, because I definitely think there's something there. But as I've grown chronologically or intellectually, the lingo doesn't quite fit comfortably for me as what I was kind of taught when I was younger, and kind of the language and lingo choice for this book. But again, you know, I love stats and statistics, and statistically it's been shown that people who pray are prayed for during illness, including things like cancers, do statistically better in terms of healing, in terms of like recovery rates or recuperation or repression of, you know, symptoms or tumors. And so I'm always swayed by stats that are done well, data that's collected that's well done. And even, you know, skeptical scientists have this way of looking at religion and how it's almost, well, it's advantageous to be a believer more so than it is to be a non-believer. So let's just say there are four scenarios in terms of, you know, you believe in God and there is a God. You believe in God and there is not a God. You're a non-believer and there is a God. And a non-believer and there is no God. So there are four scenarios. And so if you're a believer, whether there's a God or no God, they're kind of both good or great scenarios, right? So if you believe and there's no God, then fine, that works out. You've lived a life by hopefully very good principles and tenets, and you've been a good person, and you've used your faith to do that, and there just happens to be no God. Now, the contrary is not true, and it's not like a fine scenario. So if you're a non-believer and there is no God, that's fine. But if you're a non-believer and there is a God, you're kind of fucked. And so it's less risky, I guess, if you want to look at it that way, to be a believer than it is to be a non-believer. And I've heard this sort of conversation probably more eloquently put by scientists in this debate around religion and God. And so I would say that further backs my respect, either coming from a philosophical standpoint or from a statistical standpoint, but then also me having had a very spiritual childhood or religious childhood and a very much very spiritual practice now, just using a very different concept of God and what that looks like, and different words for prayer, I would say reflection or meditation. And I think that there's all this, like, you know, there's definitely something, maybe it's quantum physics, but definitely something going on there. So I'm not really sure what the rest of the book will be like in terms of the lingo and how uneasy I'll be with it, reading it, but I do respect what's being said in these chapters. And I do think that regardless of who we are and our backgrounds, a little bit of unconditional love and support from some God or higher being is something that's kind of beautiful, and we could all use a little more, whether we got that as a child or didn't get that as a child, whether we have that now or whether we don't. Having some sort of higher belief kind of offers that to you, and I don't think that's a bad thing. And I love the part in chapter 4 where it says that you cannot take credit for other people's successes or blame them for their failures, and I think this is something a lot of us probably struggle to embody and take things very personally, especially if we're in any sort of mentor role or if it's someone we're close to and they're just not ready to make that change in their life. I think that's extremely hard to do. And especially with families, you know, when we do things for other people, creating a sense of a dependency rather than empowerment, that can be very challenging to implement, and it could be quite isolating at times when your family doesn't have a reaction that's positive, that said, hey, thank you for pushing me to do this on my own. I have to do it for me. I have to want it for me. That's not usually the first reaction. It's usually more offended, like, how could you? Why wouldn't you help me? And so he doesn't go into too much of, like, that conversation and how isolating that could be and how hard it is to do that. And I know there are scenarios in family dynamics and maybe things with drug dependency, and there are definitely scenarios that complicate this even further, and I'm not the expert, and this author is not the expert, and even with the advice of trying not to create dependency, I do also know that there are scenarios that is maybe the right decision. And I would never judge someone for making that difficult call in their own personal life, because they know their story better than I do. So yes, sometimes we have better ability to assess situations that are outside of our immediate world, but we also do not know other people. We can try to put ourselves in their shoes, but we don't know actually the full extent of what they've been through and who they are and their intricate relationships that we may be judging. Lastly, I like this part when it says that we have a mission and this journey to being the very best version of ourselves and our truest self. And that's something I think a lot of people want, and that's definitely something that I, in all honesty, do want, and I definitely am kind of working on. And as someone who has 100-plus interests in a lot of different meaningful paths, calling my name, it causes me a great deal of anxiety to not know which path to go down and not know exactly what my calling is right now or my mission, and I do know that maybe in my lifetime it will change. But I do think that the answer will be easier for me to discern when I am happier. It's probably going to be, and I hope this is going to be true because it's been true in the past, that it will be easier to tap into my God of whatever that looks like. Which I would say is more of like a beautiful, endless supply of positive, loving energy. I think I'll be able to tap into that a little bit better through my personal shift and work on me in order to make that decision of what will be my path going forward. So it's a journey. We're all on a journey. Sorry that this reflection was a little longer. I thought I didn't really do the last chapter justice, and I guess there's a lot of content here, but I will try to keep them shorter in the future.